And tonight, our main speaker is Sydney.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sydney, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. My sobriety date is October 15th, 1985, and last week I celebrated 23 years in AA. Thank you. You'd be standing if you only knew. And, I'll start from the beginning. My mother was 12 years old, and my father 14 years old, when they were put into a concentration camp for 5 years of their life. After the war, they met, married, and my brother was born in Germany. And 10 years after that, they came to America, and I was born. The golden child. And my father's ambition and hard work made him a successful businessman, and my mother a housewife. And I was afforded all the opportunities that a young man could ever want, and the love and support and nurturing of my parents. But all those opportunities were wasted. All the wonderful choices available to me, gone. Because I can only choose one thing, alcohol. I couldn't say no. I could not say no. 13 years old to about 17 years old, we would spend summers upstate, and drinking was sort of a summer thing. I never brought it home during the school year, and there was some unmanageability there. But I learned that the discomfort, the fear, the restlessness, irritable, discontent feelings that I had with life were assuaged by those summer drinks. I really crossed that invisible line when I was 18 years old and I went away to college. And there, the controls were off, and I began drinking nightly. At the time, I had a girlfriend, and she drank the way I did, and I literally took my alarm clock and threw it in the garbage pail and drank every single night. And I was clueless how everyone else was functioning and doing what they did at school. And I really didn't know why I was there. I knew I wanted something bigger, better, more grandiose. You know, I was that egocentric with the inferiority complex, big daydreamer. And this went on for a while. And then the year 1977, I'm 19 years old, and the famous Studio 54 opens. And I go, and I go, and I never leave. I never leave. And I really mean this. I left college to go to Studio 54. And that was my choice, another wonderful choice. And I couldn't believe it. 19 years old and all the fame and fortune in there. And those were the things that I wanted. Those were that was my value system. I just wanted out of wherever my feet were. I wanted something bigger, better. And I spent those nights just drinking and dreaming, drinking and dreaming. And nothing happened. I think that the unmanageability was disguised by youth. And lo and behold, I then decided that I would attend acting school, and I left, convinced my parents that I needed to leave college and that, send me to acting school. And it was very difficult going to classes while going to Studio 54. And so I conveniently made all my classes in the afternoon so I can sleep it off. And I really never attended, classes. I mean, while all my peers were stomping the pavement as they, I was stomping the dance floor. And so time went on, and I went on a holiday to Florida. And there, one evening, I was drunk enough to fall in love. And and I was not out of the closet yet, and this was my first experience, and he lived in San Francisco, and so, even though I had just left college, And even though I had just enrolled in acting school, and even though I was just getting some extra work on this soap opera, and these little things were happening, I decided that it would be a good decision to move to San Francisco. And so I did, because I spent a drunken week in Florida, and I returned to my parents' dismay and shipped off to San Francisco. And here, I don't know how it happened, but it was alcohol. And slowly, you know, I packed a bag full of gorgeous sweaters and, you know, sport coats and stuff like that, and I can tell you that I don't know what happened to those clothes. You know, I don't know what happened to me, but suddenly, through daily drinking, my life in a short time at 20 years old became very dark and ominous, and the people that I hung around were dangerous, and I began to lose a lot of weight and become sickly because of my drinking. I had come out of the closet through a letter to my parents and were convinced that they disowned me, and I was despondent and distraught. And I was one time walking down the street, and I was 20 years old, and someone came over to me and handed me a dollar. You know, I just can't imagine what I looked like. And, you know, it was really, really horrible. I was living a life, you know, on the edge, the fringe, the underbelly of San Francisco, and it was very, very dangerous. And I found myself on Salvation Army lines for food, unwilling to work, incapable of working. I had a moment of clarity after a year, and during that stint, in the middle, on a blackout, I called my parents and told them I'm returning home, and they were so happy, and I came home and came out of the blackout and said I made a mistake and went back. And, you know, my poor parents. And, well, anyway, after a year there, I had a moment of clarity, and I knew that if I stayed there, that I would probably die. It was just too dangerous, and so I came home. And the problem was is that when I entered my parents' home, I had tasted the forbidden fruit of excess in San Francisco, and I just couldn't cope in my parents' home. You know, I mean, I had all this, what I thought was freedom, you know, the freedom to drink the way I drank and to live by night and sleep away the day, and I could not do that in my parents' home. And so they, being great enablers, and me, being an alcoholic manipulator, convinced them to get me my own apartment, and they did. And I, under one condition, that I work for a friend of my father's, and so I was put into my own apartment, and I was 21 years old, working for a friend of my father's, and of course, going to the nightclubs at night, and incapable of getting up and going to work. And the shame and the humility of that, and just confusion of, you know, this is just ridiculous. I can't do this. I can't work at this 9-to-5 thing. I'm bigger, better. Something has to happen. And my parents would just not have it. And they took me out of that apartment, and I returned home. But on my 22nd birthday, after lashing out at my friends for not drinking the way I wanted to drink, I went to a discotheque, and there across the bar was a distinguished older gentleman, quite handsome, and I sent him a drink, and we went home that evening, and I never left. And this was to change my life. He was wealthy. He was connected to famous celebrities. He had a beach home. He traveled the world, and I had arrived. This was it. I didn't need my parents' studio apartment anymore. And this was the life. This is what I was cut out to be. And clearly, through all his celebrity connections and famous people, I was going to rise to stardom like you would not believe. And what I did, though, was all those opportunities that he availed to me, I couldn't make it. I couldn't make the audition to the famous director's office, a lifetime opportunity, because I was in the nightclub, looking at my watch, drinking, and just wondering, how am I going to get up in the morning to do this? I just can't. And I chose not to go. It was endless like that. And, you know, the grandiosity of this part, please forgive me for it, but it was what I chased. It was what my value system was. And I was so young, and I believed that that would fill me up, you know, and it just didn't, you know. And I traveled the world with him, and Bob likes to hear, he always loves when I say, I've had a drink thrown in my face in every country in the world, you know, and I've thrown drinks in people's faces around the world. And all throughout this, being young and experiencing what I believe to be this incredible lifestyle, there was a emptiness and a sadness and a soul sickness that was so deep, you know? And all I could do, everyone I knew around me was thriving. They were becoming doctors, lawyers, contractors, getting married, finishing school, grad school, and all I was doing was putting on clothes, walking up Madison Avenue, stopping for drinks in the afternoon, falling asleep, getting up in the evening, and going out and doing it again. I slept away the days and lived by night. And there was this incredible inertia, you know, and such sadness and shame and humility for my lifestyle. And by the way, my parents were thrilled. He was slightly older than they were. And so it was a very uncomfortable situation. The jig was up. He was getting on my case, and my parents were getting on my case for, you know, my bills were unmanageable. I was the big shot in the bar, you know, spending money on credit cards that I didn't have money for. He would bail me out. My parents would bail me out. You know, big shotism. Drinks for everyone. And, you know, now my body, I had alcoholic neuralgia, you know, I would vomit all the time, I was just bloated, and just spiritually bankrupt. And I started working for my father, and of course that was like a charity case, because I never was able to show up there either. And you know, day in, day out, I would have to make a phone call that I'm too sick to come in, too sick to come in. And one evening, work was out of the city, and I would drive in blackouts or having been up for 24 hours, 36 hours. It is a miracle that I didn't kill myself or other people, you know. And one night, coming home from work, I decided to go into one of my bars, and I was only going to have one drink, you know? And that one drink turned into two drinks. Two into four, four into six, six into I don't know how many. And that evening, my biggest never was to occur. And a stranger came over to me, and I went home with him. And that evening, I was drunk enough to put a needle to my arm many, many times. And it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and as I left his apartment and I'm walking through Central Park, terrified that I might be killed, and looking at my arms and hungover and knowing that I'm going to have to call my brother for the millionth time and tell him that I cannot come to work. And I was just thinking, you know, what is happening now, and how did this occur? I mean, it was only, you know, one drink that I was going to stop in for. And I came home, and my partner was just freaked out, and, you know, where were you, and what's going on? This has got to stop. I'm going to call your parents. And I ran out of excuses, and though now I realize it was the grace of God, but I didn't believe it. I just said, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. And I called my brother, And I ran out of excuses, and that was such a great one. I mean, I've used everything, you know? And in 1985, it was becoming very trendy, you know? And so I called my brother, and I said, Jack, I can't come into work today. I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, he said, you know, listen, it's okay. We're going to help. We're going to help. And I had gotten a number that morning off the television, one of those 1-800 numbers, and they sent me to a place on 60th and York, Regent Hospital. And that morning I walked in there, and the doctor met with me, and he looked at my arms, and he smelled my breath, and he said, sir, you know, we will check you in right away. And I said, no, it's not what you think. And he just was amazed that I was resistant, and I said, no one has sent me here. I came here on my own, you know? And so what began was intensive therapy. 2 times a week with a group, 1 day a week with him individually. And they told me and taught me and talked about alcohol. And I talked about myself. And and they talked, and I talked. And they, in the group, were all AAers, and they kept on telling me, you know, you have to go to AA, and, you know, and I would listen. Clearly, I've sat with them for months, and, you know, they needed AA. I did not need AA, and I was doing well, except at the end of each month, for some reason, the urge to go out to a nightclub came, but I had the strength of the rehab with me, and so I would go. And there I would be, and I'd have my soda, and then I would have a drink, and then I'd have another drink, and I'd have another drink, and another drink, and another drink. And I would come back to the rehab outpatient facility with my tail between my legs, and they told me, you must go to AA. And finally, they were going to throw me out of group if I did not go to an AA meeting. And so on October 15th, 1985, I went to my first AA meeting. And the reason it's the 15th was in 1985, Columbus Day fell on the 14th, and I was not going to give up that weekend, long weekend of drinking, which I liked. And so I walked in to my first AA meeting, and it was the most amazing thing that ever happened to me. It stopped. It just stopped. And I took a breath, and a man who clearly read into action and working with others approached me, and in a gentle way put out his responsible hand and gave me his phone number and took mine and called me. And he called me the next day, you know. And he gently told me that I needed to stay away from people, places, and things, and that this urge that I had, he talked about a higher power, and he told me with blind faith that I should just get on my knees and ask for a daily reprieve from alcohol, pray to God for the obsession and the compulsion to lift. Within these 90 days, a miraculous thing happened. I mean, having been in the nightclubs and living this crazy, fast-paced life, suddenly the most substantive thing in my life became church basements and diners and Saturday evenings in someone's house playing charades, you know, or talking about program stuff and telling our stories. And it was the most fulfilling experience that I have ever had. And I quickly got involved in service, and I began the step work. And I would say that the most important thing that has occurred in my life has been the steps, and finding God and having the willingness to change and the openness and the honesty to continue with the work of AA. You know, in the last 23 years, the most amazing things have occurred in my life. I have gone through many ups and downs, life on life terms. Went back to college in sobriety, and I got my degree. I thought I wanted to be a social worker, and then after re-educating myself, I decided I didn't want to be a social worker. And, you know, that's good. That's okay. You know, but I got that. I went back and got that BA. I opened two businesses in sobriety. That is a miracle that someone like me was capable of doing that. And that's because I'm sober and I have the steps behind me and the support of AA. I fell in love in AA and I've lost love in AA. I've buried the four most important people in my life while sober. And I was responsible and available to them. I held those people in my arms while they died. What a privilege. You know, years and years before that, when my mother had quadruple heart bypass surgery, what an effort it was to show up, you know, and be there when that clock was ticking and I knew that my nightlife was going to start soon and that this infringement of visiting my mother ill, you know, though I loved her a lot, but it was just in the way of that drink. Or when my best friend's father died and I had to go and do a shiva call, I couldn't do it because I had an important evening drinking engagement. That was the type of person I was when I was drinking. Funerals? Please, who can get up that early? You know? And this was different, you know? And quite an experience being responsible. The most rewarding things in my life today are having sponsees and working with them and the newcomer and taking them through the steps. I continue to learn so much from that. I also want to say, as the years went on, I found myself once again acting out, angry, resentful, fearful. My life was unmanageable, and yet I wasn't drinking. And I mean, had I come this far to feel this way? I mean, what was wrong? What was wrong now? I mean, I had done the steps. I did them. Well, that was just it. I did them. I wasn't living them anymore. And through some big book study meetings and some new people that entered my life, I realized that I, as they say in Into Action, I was resting on my laurels. And what I did was realize that the 10th step continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Like a daily reflection said a while ago, rarely, occasionally, frequently, well, that's what I was doing. No, continued, every day, every day. And the 11th step, every day, prayer and meditation, and working with newcomers, the 12th step, every day. And that's what I began to do. And my life turned around again. And I want to just leave the message that now, at 50 years old, I came in here when I was 27, I'm faced with life-on-life terms again. Lots of challenges, some transition, but the promises are true in my life today, even with the challenges that I have. And it is just amazing that by practicing these principles in all of my affair and living in step 10 and 11 and 12, that I walk through this gracefully, that prayer and my higher power and my conscious contact with him continues to just get me by. And I want you all to know that all of you are a mirror of who I am, and I see courage, faith, love, strength, compassion, survivors in all of you and in me. And I really appreciate all of you being here and being a part of what keeps me whole today. So thank you.
My name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic, and I chair the Atlantic Group.